you won't ever find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Now tuned into the greatest. Turn the music up in the headphones. Tim, you can go and brush your shoulder off. And I got you.
We're in the back of the hotel, the Pros Lounge, with Joe Wright from the Chops Podcast. Thank you for joining.
Thank you for having me.
So you ended up yesterday had a pretty good day.
Yeah, well, I'd have to say, yeah. So, average is about 45, I believe, and I have 51, a little over that. And if you're above average, can't really complain going to day two, so I'm pretty happy.
And Annie had a pretty good day, too.
Yeah, she ended up with 62 or 63.
Do you have any prop bets with her on this?
No. I think that'd be stupid.
Stupid on your part, right?
Stupid on my part. Yeah. I'm like, I think we all assume that she would, on any given Sunday, be better than me at this game. And, if we wanted to combine it with some sort of Shakespearean monologue contest, I think then I might take her on.
We've never seen you guys. We've been around both of you guys together a bunch and never heard you talk about poker. Do you guys talk about poker away from the tables at all? Or?
Pretty much like at the end of the day, I run a few hands by her to make sure I'm almost always wrong. If I have a question, I usually did the wrong thing.
And does she like do her normal style of like saying, berating you and saying?
She has to handle me with kitty gloves because I'm super sensitive.
Because I've seen her like at the WSOP Academy,
so
like tearing into people.
Can I tell you the truth? Here's the thing: is I ask her something, and there's this huge pause before she says anything to me, which I know is her gathering like her strength to calm herself and say this, and then she starts with like, "baby," and then I know that I made a mistake. So it kind of always starts that way. And the thing is like, I can tell you, like, other people would say that I should play it differently. I know what her style is. She certainly is the one who taught me how to play. I do a few different things at the table because I have to, because people assume that I play like her a lot of the time. And I think that people expect that, so I have to switch it up a little. But she's a very good teacher. And those few times that we do talk about poker. And then she usually runs a hand or two that made her really mad by me. I usually hear it five or six times because it goes through me, Eric Seidel, Howard Lederer, and then usually somebody else. So I hear it over and over. But that's the only time we talk about poker. And occasionally, I want to learn Omaha this year and some of the mixed games. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure we'll be talking more poker because of that.
I can't even believe I'm asking this question.
Oh, no.
Because it feels... Well, it just feels like it's... I don't know. So bachelorette. But how did you guys meet? I mean, how did this all come together with you and Annie?
It's like a Barbara Walters story.
I know. It's gotten into me. Who am I?
Yeah, exactly. What's going on? We were at this Christian youth retreat.
What?
Lisa Jones. Yeah, Lisa Jones. How did we meet? As Lacey Jones walks up. I don't remember. Yeah. Annie and I met at a nightclub in Los Angeles.
Nice.
I was going through my divorce, and she had been through hers, and we were at a club called Continental, I think, at the time.
Which is probably
National.
Closed, right?
Yeah, yeah. National Continental. And we're both in the same place at the same time.
Like, just high on ecstasy and dancing to club music.
I am. But so wasted, right. Dude. Yeah, totally wasted. No. We're just there. And I was hanging out, I believe, oddly enough, with Dee Dozier that night, too.
He was playing today.
And we were just kind of in different parts. And Annie's agent was there from ICM. And I was being repped at ICM at the time. So was my ex-wife. And ICM kind of knew what was going on in my life. And knew Annie's life, and her agent came up to me and said, "Have you ever met Annie?" And I said, "No." And he brought me over, and we started talking, and we both were just kind of like, not really paying attention to each other. And then she said, "What do you do?" And at the time, I had just written my Spider-Man comic, and she goes, "I said I just wrote the Spider-Man comic," and she said, she just stopped and looked at me and said, "I've never met anybody who did that." And I go, and I looked her in the face, and for the first time ever, I was like, "That's why I wrote it, because I never met anybody who did it either." And we started talking after that and just kind of hit it off. And that was the beginning.
I didn't know you wrote a Spider-Man comic.
Spider-Man Unlimited number 14.
Framed on the wall?
Framed. 40 copies.
Yeah, we were trying to figure out, like, if we were going to label you, you know, like director, producer, poker player,
right.
actor, comics.
Nap specialist.
Yeah, nap specialist. Nanny, right?
Who's the boss, yeah. Nanny?
But, I mean, how would you want, like, where would you
start?
We're
all about labels.
Yeah,
we're all. We got a label. Yeah.
Really?
Makes life easier.
Yeah.
Really?
But where would you start? What would be the first description, first thing there?
If I had a choice, it would be girl on the rail. But it's not an option for me. Though, well, I might find a way. Yeah. I don't know.
After the singles ladies performance, we'll put nothing past
you. Yeah, you could dress. We don't have Ask Girl this year, and we're looking for a substitute. So if you came dressed in a bikini.
If you came in the black leotard.
And watched somebody play instead of the rail. I have an idea for that, by the way.
Do you?
Yes, I do. But I'm not giving anything away. I think, you know, if we're talking about what I do, I mean, honestly, I wish I could give you a better answer than this, but I really just kind of try to do what makes me happy. So at the end of the day, that changes a lot. I get distracted by shiny objects. So whatever makes me the happiest is kind of what I head towards. This time of year, it tends to be like, you know, playing some poker for the month. But I like to think of myself, I've always wanted to be an actor since I was young. I'm glad that I've been able to do that a lot. But now it seems like the natural progression of things is leading me to be more of a director and more of a producer and more of a writer because you have more control of those areas. And I'm sure I'll continue acting. But I think as an actor, things either come to me or they don't. I mean, I have a choice to be in L.A. today auditioning for a Disney show called I'm in the Band, right? Which
is that the Joe Bros?
Well, no, it's not. But what's funny... Annie's daughter right now is looking at me going, oh, my God, that show is horrible. That's what she just said, right? And I have an option to be in L.A. to audition for that or here.
Right.
And I could have gone back and auditioned for a stupid show. Please forgive me if any of the producers are listening right now. But, I mean, it's a kid show.
Yeah.
You know, on Disney. And
you actually would be great for a kid show. Like, I could see you.
In my leotard.
I see Yo Gabba Gabba all the time at Chop's house because he has a three-year-old.
That's true.
And, I mean, that guy's like a club...
He was a club DJ.
Yeah, in San Francisco. Really? But, I mean, huge market, huge potential there. I mean, I think you could do it.
I think, should I start my own show?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I think you should start, like, write your own, and produce your own show.
Hey, kids. Really? Come over. Sit on my lap.
It's the Uncle Joe show.
Uncle Joe, I like that.
Come give Uncle Joey a hug. See if you can find the candy in my pocket. No, I think, you know...
But when you do write, like, what kind of stuff are you writing? Are you writing any screenplays now, or are you...
The most interesting thing that I wrote is I actually wrote a pilot for me and Penn Jillette to play brothers.
Okay.
Which came from us playing in a poker tournament together, and me being like, people think I look like you.
Wait, you're not Penn Jillette?
I'm mini
off
Gillette.
Target on this one.
Mini Gillette. I'm Jeff Shulman, as we all know. I'm actually Jeff Shulman. But I wrote a pilot for me and Penn to play brothers, and I gave it to the producers who produced the TV series Townies. I acted it in 1996, and one of the producers really likes it, and he wants to shop it around at the end of the month. So when I get back, we're putting together the game plan to go out with the pilot. That has me very excited. As you know, as someone who writes, you know, just the prospect of actually getting close to selling it and going into those rooms is a place, having that key, which is like this thing you wrote.
If I had ever gotten that far, I promise you I would have been excited.
Right? Exactly. That's the thing. I'm like, because we wrote it, and me and my buddy wrote it, and I'm like, really? You want to shop it? And it makes the hair stand on the back of my neck, because it's a new area of things I've never done. And I haven't been this excited since I walked on the Paramount lot for my first audition for Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
So it's like Parker Lewis Can't Lose.
My first audition ever. So, which I was giddy about and saw like the Star Trek.
What's Corey Nemec up to these days?
Corey hangs out with David Faustino and they do a series called Starving about a couple of guys who used to be famous.
Right.
It's a web series.
I had a whole thing of Parker Lewis Can't Lose type shirts back in like 1991. Really? It was crazy.
He's a talented dude, by the way. Yeah. Corey's a talented kid. But that's actually what he's doing. I can't believe I actually know. But I do know. So the pilot, so I'm very excited about that prospect. You know, and then I'm excited about going out and we've been looking to find the right people to help us produce Mike Matisau's book into a movie and find the right screenwriter for that and attach the right people to make, I don't know if you're the one who read
it. Who would play Mike Matisau? Who could you envision playing Mike Matisau on a Mike
If Matisau? I get to, my first pick is Mark Ruffalo.
I can see that.
Yeah.
I think he's talented and can do it.
Anyway, he's not, like, terribly far off on the look scale. I can see that.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's a super talented actor, too.
Yeah. He's my number one choice.
Eternal Sunshine.
Spotless Mind. Yeah. He's a gifted kid. Yeah. I like him. John C. Reilly might be an interesting choice.
He would be interesting.
Right? Yeah. I mean, be different, you know? Yeah. So that's an interesting call, I think. Sam Rockwell could do anything. He just doesn't look like him.
Right. Yeah.
You know? But if you put on some weight on him, maybe. You know? But he'd be great with a lot of the aspects.
Yeah.
Those are my three kind of, like, guys who I love.
Yeah. Now, you're wearing your Celtics jacket, which leads to two really important questions. And really, the whole reason why we have you here today.
Are we talking about LeBron?
Where's he going?
Okay. Yeah, we had to talk about this in the car.
Yeah.
By the way, there's not a table out there right now.
It's disgusting.
Yeah, everybody's talking about it. It's the only conversation. I mean, I think people could care less what's going on.
I never tweet, and I even tweeted LeBron James.
Yeah.
You started the line with Celtics, and I'm like, LeBron? Right? Which is not where he's going,
right,
by the way. Though, I personally, if he could go to the Celtics, I would be so giddy. But I think Miami. I think he's got to go to Miami.
Why has he got to go to Miami?
Because he's going to win.
He's got to go to Chicago. I think he wins more champions. I think he's got a better shot at winning titles immediately and long-term in Chicago.
Do you really?
Yeah.
I'm not so sure. I think he likes Miami, too.
I think he likes Miami as part of the problem. But everything that he's been saying, like,
part of the problem for who? For the people of Chicago?
For the NBA, because I don't think it's a good thing that he goes to Miami.
No?
No, I think it's a good thing if he's in Chicago or New York. Or maybe even stays in Cleveland, except for he's never going to win a title.
He can't stay in Cleveland. Well, I tell people, he's not staying in Cleveland, for one, because it's Cleveland.
Right.
Right? You want to get out of Cleveland, I'm assuming. I don't care if you're the king of Cleveland. Right?
It's like Detroit Jr.
Right. Exactly. You want to leave Cleveland. I think, two, he's not going to win a championship there.
Right.
You know, he'll take a pay cut to go someplace to play, as I would, you know. I had this conversation in the car. It's like, you know, Howard taking second in the tournament champions, it's more frustrating for him because he wants that trophy.
Right.
You know?
And he was our official pick to win it, so he had that much more pressure on him.
That's probably why he lost.
I know.
Thank you.
Sorry, Howard.
Yeah. But I feel like that's the thing. It's like, you know, he wants the championship. Howard's not playing for the money.
Right.
He's playing to win, you know, and I think LeBron is at that place, too. I mean, how much more money does he really need? And they're going
to
pay
him. He wants to be a billionaire, and he could have, I don't think he's going to, well, saving the state taxes in Florida. So.
That's right. State tax in Florida?
That'll help a little bit.
They give him a piece of each jersey that they sell when he goes to Florida?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to sell a million jerseys right
instantly.
Instant. I mean, come on. He's got a lot of money he can make in Miami or New York. And I think those are the two, for sure.
Okay. Question two, back, you know, closing the loop here on the Celtics talk here. Celtics, Massachusetts, perfect storm.
Wow. Look at you.
Pretty solid, right?
That's a very solid loop.
How many times did Mark Wahlberg ask you or tell you to say hi to his mom, to your mom?
How many times did he say it to me?
Say hi to your mother for me.
You know, to be honest, he never met my mom, so no, he never said that to me. The real story, you know, I tell you, it was a great set to work on, but Mark really had an entourage with him wherever we went.
Right.
It was before Entourage.
Entourage, yeah.
And I couldn't stop thinking to myself all the time about how good a TV show this would be.
No way.
I swear. Because I hung out with these guys.
Did he have like a turtle?
Yeah, his name was Donkey.
Yeah. He actually passed away, right?
Donkey passed away.
Yeah.
Donkey's the guy who, like, you know, he hooked me up with my tickets to, like, the premiere.
Uh-huh.
Donkey was that guy, right?
What else did he hook you up with?
Anything you needed. Donkey was the guy.
Yeah, exactly.
Not so quick, but, like, you know, everything you needed, he gets hands on it.
Yeah.
He was like the runner boy. Yeah, he was the runner kind of, like, for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was, like, the kind of his brother, you know, yeah. Jimmy, who's always around. There was a big mix of guys.
But not Donnie.
Not what?
Not Donnie.
No. Donnie wasn't around. But I know
Donnie's
Donnie Boger.
Yeah, Donnie's probably off filming Band of Brothers or something at that time.
At that
Carwood Lipman. It's a big role.
I auditioned for Band of Brothers, too.
Do you know what part?
Well, not two, also.
Right.
There was no two.
Do you remember what part you were auditioning for?
For Band of Brothers?
Yeah.
They brought me in.
I'm trying to think, who would I envision you playing?
I was totally wrong for the entire cast, to be honest with you.
Necessarily.
There were no big guys. There weren't any big guys in that show. Especially no long-haired guys.
Definitely no, but I mean, you get a haircut.
Yeah, but they never feel like they have to do that.
Right.
But I went in and I read for several. That was pretty solid. I can't remember what it was.
Yeah.
It's a shame.
But I did see with Ron Livingston. Right?
Yeah.
He's very talented.
And was a spot-on ringer for the real Lou Nixon. I don't know if you've seen photos of the real-life guy. But
I walked into the audition, and they had his picture next to the guy.
Uh-huh.
And I went, well, that was a shoe-in.
Yeah.
Right? Creepy. Okay.
Actually, a lot of it was creepy. A lot of those guys were kind of like just spot-on.
Right.
Yeah, it was good job casting there. DreamWorks are...
Congratulations, Spielberg, on not making a mistake.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah. Should we do the questions yet?
Is it time?
Yeah.
Oh, no.
It is time.
What questions?
You watch This Week in Poker. You watch it religiously. You probably watch it 5 times each week.
This Week in Poker?
Yeah. For our guests in This Week in Poker, and we're going to start doing this a little bit more in the podcast, what we do is kind of like speed round of questions.
Speed round. Okay.
Speed round. So you basically have a minute, and we're going to fire off as many questions. You're not trying to win a prize or anything, but we're looking at like one-word answers.
You're really setting a clock.
He's really setting the timer on it.
All right. Okay.
Right.
So whenever Colin's ready and tells me go, I'm just going to ask a question and fill in the word.
Just one word? All right.
Generally.
Try and keep it.
Right. Ready?
Yeah.
Go.
The one food I wish I could eat is?
Pizza.
George Clooney in one word.
Darling.
Joan Rivers is it?
Cunt.
We had a bet on that. We were right. The most embarrassing thing I've done to get a part is?
Oh, my God. What's the answer? I dropped my pants. I can't believe Annie's daughter said that. Go on.
She was motioning it, too.
The one director I'd most like to work with is?
Spielberg.
The one actor I'd most like to direct?
Oh, Sam Rockwell.
The one thing I liked most about Shannon Elizabeth was her...
boobs. No. Sense of humor.
And
that's
I'm
it.
Going to do this in the main event. How far are you going?
All the way.
All right. Thank you. That was a fun one. We got like 20 minutes of LeBron announcement. I can't even stand it.
Yeah. That work?
Yeah, that's perfect.
Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, we hit the machine. Sorry. That was just too easy. Right? Mainly because I bought those.
Yeah.
So they're my favorite part. Yeah. I paid for them.
Right.
Oh, are we recording?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. Yeah.
No water.
That's fantastic. Bars come out. Now you feel them now. 52 cars roll out. Remove ceiling in case 52 bras come out. Now you chilling with a boss. 50 cars SC on the sleeve. After 40 club ESPN on the screen. I paid it quick for the jeans. Plus the slippers is clean. No chrome on the wheels. I'm a grown-up for real. We're here. Just Calacanis. How's your day 1D going?
What level are we at right now?
We just completed level 2, so we're on the second break. Okay. 100, 200.
Are you winning yet?
I just came back.
Have you won the main event yet?
I have not won the main event. If by some freak of nature I can basically cash, that would be a huge success for me. So last year I went out middle of day 2, 3,000 out of 6,500 or whatever.
But you want to prop that, right?
No.
Last year we just had a $1,000 last longer with four guys, so I lost a prop bet. But now I have a prop bet with David Sachs for 10,000 shares of our companies, which is worth similar amounts of money in cash.
Sure.
So that should be fun.
Has he played yet?
He's playing three tables away from me.
Oh, really?
I think he's got 30,000 stocks. He's a true knit.
Yeah.
But he's a good player.
But you've been saying you've been playing like a knit today.
I've been basically knitting it out because what I learned last year was you get – The table you sit at is critical at the main event because you could be sitting with three pros or five online players or three drunk guys who were out all night partying. I mean, it's very random here. The field is so diverse that you really have to know what you're dealing with. And it's going to take an hour or two to figure out what you're dealing with. And basically, you know, I think being tight in the beginning and maybe getting an idea of who's at the table is a really good idea.
How would you sum up your table?
Right now, there. If you just look at sort of money in pre-flop, people raising pre-flop, there are three guys who one who's done it basically popped it six times in an hour. I basically will take an hour, figure out how many times people are raising pre-flop, specifically in the World Series or any deep stack tournament, because that's sort of. It seems to be that's everybody's thinking is I'm just going to rob blinds and try to find weak players and pound them. Like Joe Seabock does that. All these guys do that. Phil Ivey does that. They look for weak players, and they try to just pound them as much as they can, get under their skin, and then maybe trap them and get their entire sack. So you don't want to be that guy if those that level of professional is at your table. So once they identify that, and what happened to me in this at this exact table was I lost one hand, which is like an $8,000 hand when somebody had ace-jack, and I flopped my ace-king, flopped king, five-king. And so I've got trips and, you know, top kicker, and this guy stays in for runner-runner flush with his ace-jack suited. So that can happen a lot at the main event because there are people here who will overvalue hands, and they'll stay in hands longer than they should, and you won't actually be able to bet them out because it's 30,000 chips. You have 300 big blinds. You know, there's a lot of dynamics to the main event that are different than other tournaments. The deep stack, the fact that there are people here who probably shouldn't be, the fact that there are people here who are the best in the world. So once you find out who are the people who are this is at least my one-on-one strategy. Once you figure out who the people are who are hammering it and pounding it pre-flop and trying to rob blinds and coming over the top of people to try to take their raises, you can get into a hand with them. Re-raise them if they perceive you as one of those nits, and they're going to let it go because they're like, well, there's no reason to get into it with the nit who's got aces right. or kings, and I have 10-5, or they have 7-8 suited or something. So that worked two or three times in the last hour and got me back up to 21. I was down as low as 16 or 17. And so, I'm sorry, but it is a real grinded-out table, the one I'm at. Compared to last year when I was at a table where I was like a deer in headlamps. It was like bombs were going off. These guys were, you know, betting $8,000, $6,000, and it's 100, 200.
Right.
It's like, really? You're betting 10 times big one?
The level of play we've seen over the last 6 years in covering this can be staggeringly bad on the first first few days. It's really amazing. Has anybody recognized you from the PokerStars
yes.
big game?
Yeah.
From your table?
Yeah.
Or just in general?
I've had maybe four or five people who have recognized me so far here at this event, and two people at the table,
okay.
the dealer and one other person had seen it.
Notice that you're, you know,
And I'm getting a ton of texts from people about it, you know, like, because they just had the best hands episode of the big game, so
already.
I guess I was, my lay down of the tens was in that, so people are, how could you lay down second best set, you know, well, if people are going all in for $150,000, like, maybe second best set when there's a straight and
right.
on the board, you know. Maybe it's not the best hand. Of course, I did actually have the best hand, and then they ran it twice, and I would have lost both times. So
right.
I can take absolutely zero credit for a good laydown, unfortunately. It would be much better if they both turned over, you know, different straights or something like that. Then I would look like a genius, but
right.
instead I get no credit for that laydown. Except for people who don't understand poker who think, oh, I made a great laydown, even though I was percentage ahead.
Right.
How much poker are you playing these days? I know you played the big game on TV. You're playing this,
yeah.
but are you playing weekly back home or?
I had a kid this year, so I basically had to redo my entire life around that. And so I basically stopped doing speaking gigs, which I used to do two or three a month, and I stopped hitting Hollywood Park in Commerce two or three nights a week, which is what I used to be able to do, is put in two sessions, you know, 6-8 hour sessions, if I don't sleep that much. And so I basically had to knock that out of my schedule, which means I've been playing select tournaments and home games where I can. And
I hear you can play online.
And now,
is that true? You can play on
yes.
the internet.
So basically now what I've done
internet
is,
this
is a great thing. I got sponsored by Full Tilt,
mm-hmm.
came to, they had sponsored me last year in the main event, which was sort of one off, but after talking to the guys about sort of some of my goals in poker and, you know, I love the game. I want to see it legalized in the United States. I think it should be legalized. I think it's, I'm a pretty libertarian guy. And also on a just pragmatic basis, we need to get these jobs. We need this tax revenue. And it's a global environment where we're basically shipping jobs overseas. We're shipping tax overseas. We can't afford to do that. I mean, just like we can't afford to be in two wars and, you know, providing health care to everybody. I mean, our country is in bad shape. So you have to reassess everything. And online poker is just one of those obvious things. The same is similar to decriminalizing or legalizing marijuana. It's probably one of those simple layup, easy things to do that will bring a lot of tax in and will not harm society. Even if you're the most conservative person, you probably understand that people playing online poker for $100 a week or doing sit and goes is not going to destroy society.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's going to keep people home. You know, with their families instead of out at casinos
because I think
and illegal poker rooms.
There's been stories about people going to casinos with their kids in the car and leaving the kids in the car.
Yeah.
If you have online poker,
it solves that problem.
You just leave them in the car.
That's in the PowerPoint presentation to Congress.
Yeah.
And less kids left in casinos.
Have you played poker at home with your kid on your lap? Or?
Wow, that's...
Yeah.
You guys can wreck the jugular. Huh?
Hey, I'll put it out there that it's possible my daughter's made a couple bets.
Nice.
It might have happened once or twice.
How old is she?
3.
Come over the top of him. Don't be a bitch, Dad.
Yeah, no, it's like
don't let him push
you
around.
Anytime I put my cap on, she'll go, Daddy, you go play poker.
Do you think we actually had...
I have actually not played poker with her, but I did actually have my wife sit on my lap and play poker with me, and she got so into it because I was playing... Come on, guys. Anyway,
I feel like I can say this.
For the first time...
If you don't know, Jason has a very hot wife. Like, she's a very pretty...
Disproportionately hot to me, basically.
Yeah. You kind of outkicked your coverage on it?
Basically, she's 5X this big blonde.
Yeah.
Like, I'm a 2, she's a 10.
And Barry Greenstein and Dan Negreanu would definitely approve. Let's just say that.
Oh, my God, they would, yes. Yeah. She is Korean, and I know those guys have the thing for Korean... For Asian ladies. Yeah. Anyway, we're playing for... tables at once on Full Tilt, and she got really into it in and this is like, I guess, every husband's dilemma. You want your wife to let you play poker for a copious amount of time and not support you in it, which she's been awesome about. But you also don't want her taking your buy-ins and, you know, asking you to buy you into the World Series, into the World Series, into these events.
It's like golf. It always seems like a good idea to have your wife out there.
Then she takes over the club.
Yeah.
Then she's at the club with her girlfriends.
Yeah.
Right. Then she's basically coming over the top, you know, in your home game and crushing all your friends. And it's a problem.
Now, and your audience is pretty much, you know, it's a big tech audience, tech-oriented audience.
Entrepreneurs,
exactly.
Tech. Media, because media guys are getting very tech now.
Yeah.
So my audience is, I would say, CXO level in general, which means CTO of a company, CEO, top 5-10 people at a company, read my newsletter, tweets, and come to my events. So.
And what do you think will take to get that audience, you know, over to playing poker? And I mean, obviously
they are, and I think, you know, once they experience it and they experience the strategy and the fun of it, and it's a great release for them because they deal with stress all day long. They deal with making decisions with partial information all day long, and that's what poker is. Stressful situations, intimidation, deception, math, all these things. Partial information to make very difficult decisions and calls. So I find that CEOs and people in high-stress business situations love it as a release. I think that's why so many of them have become, you know, high-stakes players or get into it a lot like I do. So I already have them. I get them over my house all the time for my home game. They convert very quickly, and they get very good very quick because they're quick studies. They know math. They know personalities. They know psychology. They know behavior. They manage people. So when you're a manager of hundreds of people, you know when somebody comes into your office and is like, ah, I got another job offer. I need you to, you know, match it for $50,000 more. And you're like, no. You know, like, you basically, you know, can read people pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Now, the break's almost over, so we want to let you go and get back to playing. But before we do, This Week in Poker, it's on your thisweekin.com network. We're really happy to be doing it.
Yeah, you guys are crushing it.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. One guest that you want to see us book for the show, a guest for the show.
Well, I mean, I guess Durr is the person of the moment right now. I mean, I walked by Durr's table yesterday, and it had to be 75 people around. It was 5
deep. It was like a 2+2 geek convention by the rail. But it was impressive, though. I mean, people...
It was
electrifying.
Big as Phil Ivey's, which is saying
something.
Which is today. He's 2 tables away from me. So, Ivey. So I think when you get Durr and Ivy on, that'll be great. And I think also some of the comedians and the entertainers who are into it, getting them to talk about why they like it. Don Cheadle plays a lot, and those kind of guys. So when you have them in, and that's why Jennifer Tilly was a great guest. You know, she brings some diversity to it in terms of
and cleavage.
That too. Diversity is the code word on Winter's Couch, right? this rail girl brings diversity to our portfolio of existing rail girls from WSA 2010. What percentage of posts on Winter Chops are rail girls? Is there a specific percentage?
During the WSOP, it's somewhere around like 98%.
Right.
But of course.
So it spikes up from 92.
Yeah, it spikes up from 92 from the rest of the year. So. That's about it.
Awesome.
Yeah, get back to your table, start crushing it, and good luck.
My goal is to double up.
Oh, shit! Get your towels ready, it's about to go down! Everybody in the place hit the fucking deck! But stay on your motherfucking toes! We running this, let's go!
I'm on a boat! I'm on a boat! Everybody look at me, cause I'm sailing on a boat! I'm on a boat. I'm on a boat. Take a good hard look at the motherfucking boat. Yeah.